You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back into the latest episode of Locked On Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today is always your host, Evan Setter, and joined by Jim Aiello of the Indianapolis Star. Jim, how are you doing today as we are approaching arguably the biggest game of the year for the Colts on Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens?
Yeah, I'm excited. I feel like this is a game that we can, you know, there's been some games where you can kind of gauge where the Colts are. I guess the Browns are one, the Bears were another, that you kind of could feel like you maybe understood who this team was. But because of how good the Ravens are on both sides of the ball, I really do feel like this is a perfect gauge for where the Colts will be in terms of, you know, are they AFC contenders? Are they pretenders? Are they not in the playoff mix? I think we'll have a pretty good idea after Sunday.
Colts are 5-2 this year, Jim, just like they were last year at this point. And a lot of differences, though, over that standpoint as far as just the quarterback play, the overall play of the team. But before we get into that, though, I just want to get your overall assessment of the Colts over this year. They're sitting at 5-2, that really ugly loss one in Jacksonville, the only win for the Jaguars so far this year. Is it really going into tank mode now for the rest of the year? That loss in Cleveland as well was a little bit ugly. Philip Rivers having a couple of really bad mental errors. But really, like Philip Rivers mentioned last week, Jim, a couple different ball bounces here and there. I think the Colts might be 7-0 at this point. I mean, what's your assessment of the Colts so far this year through 7 weeks?
No doubt. I mean, I think that, like, he's not wrong to point that out. I think a lot of teams could say things like that too, though. So, you know, you never know. Again, like 5-2, I hate to resort to the old cliche, but you are what your record says you are. And what the record says the Colts are is a really good team, 5-2. And I think there's been a lot of talk this week just because of the kind of the symmetry of being 5-2 this week, or this year, I should say, versus, you know, being 5-2 last year. And okay, are they about to fall off a cliff the way they did last year? And I just don't think so. I put on Twitter kind of facetiously, but I do feel this way. Like, why do I feel like the 5-2 team that the Colts are now why is it so different than last year? Well, their offense is better, their defense is better, and the special teams is better. I mean, and you could just go up and down. They're more talented. At so many spots. This is a defense that didn't have DeForest Buckner or Julian Blackman or Xavier Rhodes. I mean, Xavier Rhodes replaced a guy like Pierre Desir who wasn't playing that well. Julian Blackman replaced a guy like Malik Hooker who wasn't playing that well last year. DeForest Buckner has been a game changer for the Colts. And then offensively, Philip Rivers has been an upgrade on Jacoby Brissett. You can go down the line. I mean, Rodrigo Blankenship has been better than Adam Vinatieri. Like, everywhere you look, the Colts have gotten better. So I feel a lot better about this 5-2 start than I did about the 5-2 start last season.
Yeah, and it's really fair to say just the improvements across the board. You get Philip Rivers, a quarterback, instead of Jacoby Brissett, a lot more aggressiveness as we've seen so far from Rivers. He's really catching fire now at the perfect time. 6 touchdowns to 1 pick over his last 2 games. Of course, against the Bengals and the Lions here. So we'll know a lot more about Rivers next month against this gauntlet you'll be playing up against with the Ravens on Sunday and the Packers and the Titans twice as well. But also, I think you have to look at the defense here. DeForest Buckner's really changed everything for this defense. That pressure, you know, he's not putting up the stats, like the gaudy stats we expected. He's still helping guys like Grover Stewart. He's on pace for a massive contract extension, I imagine, this year, playing next to Buckner. Guys like Justin Houston is really benefiting. Tyquan Lewis, that breakout's happening. Julian Blackman, the revelation back there at free safety with Malik Hooker going down. Really no drop-off there with Blackman back there. Arguably maybe an improvement as far as the cover two techniques and the tackling goes there for Blackman. And even Xavier Rhodes, Jim, he's having a great year in the cold zone scheme, really reviving his career right now in Indianapolis. What's been your thoughts on this defense so far? Of course, it's been 7 games, really not much tough competition so far. But do you think this defense is legit, Jim?
I do. And I think, I mean, again, we'll get the test against the Ravens and their kind of very unique running style and running game. And you'll get that test and you'll see, you know, further tests against Tennessee and Green Bay coming up this month. But I do buy into this defense and I do buy into the fact that This exactly like you pointed out, DeForest Buckner might not have the stats, even though he's got a bunch of pressures. He's getting to the quarterback. He's having the exact kind of effect that we thought he might have on this team. You mentioned the guys on the defensive line. I don't think it's a coincidence that a guy like Tyquan Lewis is having a bit of a breakout season next to DeForest Buckner. Again, you want to credit Tyquan for doing his own thing and for working hard, and he has. He's worked so hard to get to where he is. But again, you get one-on-one matchups and teams are so focused on not letting DeForest Buckner beat them. I think that's having a positive effect on not just those guys on the D-line, though, but on the linebackers, too. And I think we might have talked about it on this podcast, but, like, one of the guys I thought expected to have a really good season because of DeForest Buckner was Malik Hooker. And that was because I thought he might be able to ball hawk a little bit more because the pressure is just going to be getting the quarterbacks a split second faster. Well, It turned out it was Julian Blackman. It turned out it was Xavier Rhodes. Those guys are able to ball hawk a little bit more, and this team has 11 interceptions this year. And again, I think that's a lot of that has been pressure related, and pressure related because of DeForest Buckner. Again, you don't want to give them all the credit in the world for doing that, because they have playmakers at different levels. I think, you know, they had a really slow start, and we should point this out for sure. They had a really slow start against Cincinnati and against Cleveland. This defense, common factor there was they didn't have Darius Leonard. Darius Leonard comes out against Detroit, and I know they scored 20-21 points. Matthew Stafford's going to do that, but I just thought they played incredibly well from start to finish, and I think that has a lot to do with having Darius Leonard on the field. So as a defense, yeah, I'm buying where they are. Again, are they a top, you know, five defense? That I still want to see a little bit more out of them, but they're easily a top 10 defense, and that, again, it's almost not a compliment because I think there's so many bad defenses around the NFL. This is not a bad defense, though. This is a good, an above average to good, and again, bordering on great defense. They have put up some great performances. Now we need to see them, now to know if they're elite, if they're one of the best in the NFL. Now we have to see them perform against some of the best teams in the NFL, some of the most diverse offenses in the NFL. But I like their odds. I like their chances. They do things that you have to do to win. And again, what they did against Detroit was so impressive. You mentioned Grover Stewart. That's a guy who's been so key to what they've done, is stopping the run. You pretty much can't run on the Colts at this point. And again, I'm boldly saying that before they play the Ravens, but you pretty much can't run against the Colts right now. And they're turning teams into – they're kind of taking one hand behind – or cutting off one hand and saying, okay, if you're going to beat us, you're going to have to beat us throwing. And then they get to pin their ears back and rush. And that's what they did. That's what they did to Matthew Stafford. They even blitzed them a bunch more, which is rare for Matt Eberflus, but he did it, and it was fun to watch. And so I really like what they're doing. The team is taking away the run game, making these quarterbacks beat them. And most quarterbacks can't play perfect games all game long well enough to beat these Colts.
Yeah, and it really goes to show you, I think, just finally Matt Eberflus might have the pieces in place. I mean, outside that week one debacle in Jacksonville, where he just looked flat out unprepared in that game, and Gardner Minshew tore up that secondary, going 19 of 20. I've seen a lot more just – I think some fans should know this, Jim, that they're not really running a lot of cover two as much as they used to. They're running a lot of cover three, cover one, even some man at some points. Matt Eberflus is really starting to mix up a little bit this year. It might be just due to more personnel, having Buckner on board there, having a couple other pieces to add on to that defense as well. But it's not the same old defense we saw last couple years with Eberflus. He's finally starting to mix up a little bit.
I think he's doing a lot of cover three, and I think that's a lot. In some ways, I think that has a lot to do with almost simplifying it for Julian Blackman and Xavier Rhodes, because Rhodes is the guy who loves to peek at the quarterback, loves to look back, and you also want him to be able to take advantage of his coverage skills. So if he's the deep corner dropping in that cover three, a lot of times what you can do is have him stick with the receiver all the way down, but also make reads. I mean, against the Jets, he was in his zone coverage and he kind of just dropped off of his, I'm sorry, he was in man, but still he was able to use his, like, I think he's got really, really great instincts and he made an interception. But again, I think you can capitalize on those things. Like you said, he has the personnel to use the guys that you put him in position to say, okay, what does he do really well? He looks back at the quarterback really well. He diagnoses plays really well. Let's put him in position to succeed. And for Blackman, again, you have him that cover three. You just say, hey, like, this is your side of the field. Like, just take this. And essentially not even side. And in cover three, he's just got the center of the field and allows him to kind of do that. Even though, I think they have played plenty of cover two as well, just like to your point, not as much as they did last year. And they're mixing it up. And against Detroit, I thought that was the best that was the most they've kind of mixed things up. They did a lot of man blitzing. They did some zone blitzing. But again, it was just a very diverse defense. Matt Eberflus showed, hey, I have this in my back pocket. I can do this if I need to, which maybe brings me to the point against the Ravens this week. If you look at Lamar Jackson, he has not been very good against the blitz at all. His passer rating plummets by about 40 points. His accuracy drops 6 or 7 points. He's thrown a couple picks against the blitz. The Chiefs blitzed the hell out of him, and he really kind of just turned into a mess in that game in week three. And so I want to know, is that something that Matt Eberflus is going to try to expose? And I think he might. I mean, if you look at the Chiefs game from last year, I think we all remember it. That was kind of Matt Eberflus' masterpiece. They played up until that point. I was just doing the research today or yesterday. Up until that point, they had played zone 80% of the time going into that game against the Chiefs. And they ended up playing man about 73 or 74%. And again, that was because they knew that was the way they were going to have to attack Patrick Mahomes, who didn't have Tyreek Hill or Sammy Watkins that game. Ended up working out perfectly. So Matt Eberflus has proven that he will change his stripes in order to fit the personnel and also to try to expose a weakness of another team. So I love that he's shown that versatility.
Yeah, this could be the game, honestly. We saw it in the 2018 wildcard game against Deshaun Watson, Eberflus' masterpiece. Last year, like you mentioned, Jim against Kansas City. This could be this one this time around with Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, because like you mentioned, Lamar just struggles against this blitz, and I think Eberflus is really going to start dialing it up to see what they can do here on Sunday at Lucas Oil Stadium. But let's hit on the offense real quick, and especially the quarterback position here. Phillip Rivers, who's done really well for himself the last couple of weeks, Jim. Overall, though, throughout the year, 1,800 yards, 10 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. I think he's only really had one bad game so far. It shows against the Cleveland Browns, where he had 2 interceptions that saved in the end zone. Those 9 points cost him as they lost by 9 in that game. But outside of that, though, really being safe to football, really catching fire, like I mentioned, against Detroit and Cincinnati. I don't think Jacoby Brissett brings them back from 21-0 like we saw a couple weeks ago against the Bengals. What's been your assessment of Rivers so far this year? And I think right here, right now, with no preseason, no OTAs, a really truncated training camp, I think he's really starting to gain his groove now and really getting really familiar with this offense and the receivers.
Absolutely. And the one thing I'll say about Phillip Rivers is that I think we all maybe reacted to those interceptions against Jacksonville, against Cleveland, and kind of went, oh, God, this is what we saw in San Diego or Los Angeles over the years. And this, like, he's lost it and it's all gone. And I think there was some instinct to go there. Where the real, I mean, again, if we were looking back, maybe we should have said, yeah, it's going to be a bit of a roller coaster ride with Phillip Rivers. He's going to make some boneheaded decisions. I actually just talked to a guy who used to play with for almost a decade, Eric Weddle, who said, yeah, it's weird. Like, Phillip Rivers is one of the smartest people he's ever been around and played with, but there's sometimes he's just going to make bad decisions that happen sometimes. So you move past that, you accept that, because what Frank Reich has said and what Eric Weddle said was he does enough good to more than offset the bad. And I think the things that he is – you made a great point about kind of developing a rhythm with the receivers and getting into it without having a preseason. He's finally starting to get that. There's a couple things that I think he has been incredibly good at that I don't think he maybe gets enough credit for. One is throwing downfield. He is averaging, I think it's 8.1 yards per attempt right now. This is not something we saw the Colts offense do with Jacoby Brissett. It was only something we saw in the Frank Reich offense with Andrew Luck. He's top 10 in that right now. They're creating explosive plays. Right now, probably percentage of their pass plays – they're better than the Chiefs. They're better than the Packers. They're producing 11% of their passing plays are going for 20 yards or more. So they're producing tons of explosive plays with Phillip Rivers. The other thing I really like about what he's done, he's not getting sacked. And again, he is incredibly good at the line of scrimmage. One is whether it's either directing his offense or changing the protection plan so he doesn't get hit. He's only getting sacked on about 2.9% of his dropbacks, which again leads the league hardest quarterback to sack in the NFL. But he's also audible to checking to plays that are open. I mean, the Jonathan Taylor play against Cincinnati, where he just completely confused the Bengals defense with that with the change and found him open for about 25 yards. He's doing a lot of that at the line of scrimmage. That's something I just learned from Eric Weddle too. He's like, he's doing things that you might not even notice because you can't tell. But he's doing a ton of that. And again, he's using his brain. My colleague Joel Erickson wrote a good story this week about the way he performed in Detroit, about taking a couple sacks as opposed to throwing the ball up in the air up for grabs or throwing the ball away. There were times in his career where he's led the league in throwing the ball away. So he's playing very, very intelligent football. There are going to be a couple of those boneheaded throws. You're just going to have to kind of live with them. But he's doing so many other good things right now in terms of explosive plays, in terms of avoiding negative plays, that the Colts have to be thrilled with what they've gotten from him so far.
BuildGo makes you the best you at whatever you do. Break through your wall. Whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Go every day. It's easy to take in 1.5-ounce packages and put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever, your golf bag to power through the back nine, or put it in your pocket to get through the day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. They have 3 delicious flavors as well. Peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. How does Built Go work so well, though? Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is a fast-absorbing gel that gets you into your system fast, plus it's easy on the stomach. Built Go is loaded with good stuff to ignite my work as well, like beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. Built Go then kicks in and keeps me going strong with B6 and B12, which is 10,000% of your daily percentages. Collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes you look better. Visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED at LOCKED. And you'll get 20% off your next order of BuiltGo. Again, use promo code LOCKED, LOCKED, to get 20% off your next order. Again, 20% off of BuiltGo when you use promo code LOCKED, LOCKED. Go ahead, Colts fans, and do that right now for a great offer. We'll, of course, know a lot more, Jim, over the next 2 months during this stretch of games where it's going to really matter and the competition's going to get a lot more stiff for the Colts offense against these defenses that you're playing against, especially, like you mentioned, Baltimore on Sunday. I mean, right now, though, Jim, if you can make a prediction at post-bye week here heading into, again, they did great against the Bengals, did great against the Lions, and now if he catches this rhythm of momentum and keeps it going, I'd be stunned. I mean, honestly, if Rivers just plays on an average level, he's not back next year, right?
Absolutely. I mean, if this is what we're looking at And I don't mean just like these two games. I mean like his seven games right now. You combine them all. If this is the quarterback he maintains, and you know, a couple more games where you're like, whoa, what was he thinking? But mostly what you've got, what you saw in the last couple games, I think, yeah, I think he's back next year. I think I still think the Colts maybe do something to address the quarterback situation. It'll depend on what their evaluation is of Jacob Eason at the end of the year and saying, okay, is this the guy we want to groom to be the heir apparent, or do we need to go out and address it in a different way via the draft or via trade? But no, I again, if he continues to play at this level, and again, I don't mean this level of just these last two games, which have obviously been great, but this level for the whole season, good with the bad, I do think he'll be back next season for sure.
Yeah, definitely agree to there, Jim. Let's hit on the running game here for a moment because – sure. Honestly, I probably spoke a little too soon in week one when Marlon Mack went down, thinking to myself, okay, they have Jonathan Taylor, the workhorse from Wisconsin. They have Jordan Wilkins as well, who really had a great game on Sunday. We'll talk more about him in a moment. That this running game won't fall off like it did, that we saw 2018, 2019, really Mack and those guys up front really creating a great chemistry and being able to be one of the top running offenses in the NFL. But ever since Mack's injury, it hasn't been the case. Jonathan Taylor's really been struggling to find those holes. Of course, the rookie adjustment. Same thing we said about Marlon Mack in 2017 as well, Jim. But the Colts are last in yards per carry as well. This isn't just a Jonathan Taylor thing. This is an offensive line thing going on right now with the rushing attack. What's been your assessment? What's going on there?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. I think you're right. Because the other part we talked about with Phillip Rivers, is I think he does a great job of putting the Colts in position to succeed. So to me, it has nothing to do with the play calling or you know, the type of run plays that they're running. At least that's my assessment. For me, it's been the failures of the offensive line. In the run game, and the failures occasionally of Jonathan Taylor and of Jordan Wilkins and of Nyheim Hines. They just haven't really meshed very well. I think the offensive line, if you look at any like Football Outsiders grades offensive lines, Pro Football Focus grades offensive lines, Football Outsiders is not thrilled at all with the way the Colts offensive line has blocked this season. You can just tell. I mean, again, it's, you don't even need the numbers a lot of times. There's eye test stuff where they're not moving. They're not kind of imposing their will on a defense the way they had in so many games last year. I don't think that's going to change against Baltimore, by the way. Their front is too good for that. So it's been confusing, I guess is a better way to put it, because this was a team that did run for 2,000 yards, that was able to impose its will against a lot of good run defenses last year and just hasn't been able to do that. And it's a lot of the same cast of characters. So you're wondering why. But again, I can't tell you why that's happening. It could have something to do with no preseason. It could have something to do with maybe some guys are playing a little hurt. We know Ryan Kelly's dealing with some stuff. We know Costanza's dealing with some stuff. So that could be part of it too. And then again, I think there's always been it's one of those things that's, again, hard to quantify. But I asked Frank Reich about it. I've asked offensive line about it before. There is a chemistry between your offensive line and your running back about knowing how a guy's going to block it and how long it's going to take to set up and when to hit the hole and when not to, when to be patient. Like, Marlon Mack had that with this offensive line last year. He was so good about knowing exactly when to hit the hole and burst through it and shake off a couple tackles, use that stiff arm he has to create extra yards. We haven't seen that with Jonathan Taylor. We started to see it a little bit with Jordan Wilkins this week. He's had a couple good games before this year, so I don't want to say it like act like the Lions game was his first good one. But I thought it was clearly his best one, where he was breaking tackles, hitting the holes hard. One of the biggest differences between the two, I thought, was Wilkins just kind of seemed to be hitting the holes a lot faster. If you looked at the next gen stats, he was hitting this hole almost a half second faster than Jonathan Taylor, who seemed to be a little bit indecisive during that game. Again, you don't want that to rattle the rookie's confidence. He's still an immense talent. It's just that, I don't know. I guess the one thing that's been disappointing about Jonathan Taylor is his inability to make guys miss, especially in the hole. He just doesn't have, again, when he's running somebody over, he's got a head of speed. He's great. But there's that wiggle that he doesn't see but he hasn't shown. Or, and again, he hasn't kind of made guys miss in the hole or made guys miss an open field very often. Those are some of the things I'd like to see him start doing in the second half of the season. We've seen them at Wisconsin. We've seen them again early in the year with the Colts. You know he can do it. I just think there's maybe a confidence issue with him in terms of knowing when to hit the hole, knowing when to make a move and dance behind the line of scrimmage or stall just for a second before hitting the hole. I think there's some of that there. And so if that continues to be an issue, I think we might see more Jordan Wilkins going forward.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Wilkins finally had his big game on Sunday as Taylor went out in the second half of that game. They said an ankle injury, but I think it was more so just the benching, where Taylor had 11 carries for 22 yards. Wilkins really doubled him in yards per carry in that manner, really helped him gain momentum on the ground game. Hopefully that continues the rest of the season for the Colts, who desperately need to get this running game going. What do you think the rest of the year is going to look like for this rushing group? Do you think it's going to be more of a 50-50 split between Wilkins and Taylor, maybe sprinkle in Nyheim Hines as well in a scat back role like we've seen the last couple of weeks? Or do you think maybe Taylor's going to be back in that bell cow role here pretty soon?
No, I think at this point going forward, we asked Frank Reich that. We said, is this going to be, Jordan Wilkins is going to start eating into Jonathan Taylor's carries? And I think we all kind of expect him to say, no, it's just a bad game for Taylor and it's his job. He didn't say that. He kind of said, we'll see. We have to watch the film. And then we asked Nick Sirianni that, and he said, Jordan Wilkins has earned more opportunities and he'll get more opportunities. So I definitely think, I don't even know who's going to start this week. But again, like Frank Reich has said, it doesn't really matter who starts. Like he kind of schemes up runs for all three of his backs. And when he's doing this, especially when he's doing his game script, the first 15, 20 plays, he schemes up runs for all three of them. So all three of them will probably see time early. And then I think he's going to, I guess to answer your question, I think he's going to go hot hand more often than not. I think Taylor might get the first crack at it most of the time. Again, because I think the ceiling is probably a little higher with him than it is with Wilkins. And again, we know the Colts feel that way. They wouldn't spend a high second round pick on Taylor if they thought that Wilkins was going to be able to be that 1-1 punch, as Reich liked to say, with Marlon Mack. So we know they think the ceiling is higher with Jonathan Taylor. So I think he's going to continue to get the early work, and then it'll say, okay, what's he doing with it? Let's see what Wilkins does with it, and we'll go from there. So the Hines stuff, I know people get frustrated with a lot of Nyheim Hines runs. I understand where the frustration comes from. He has not done very well with the runs, but the problem is you can't put him in the game as the alone running back, at least, and then have NFL or teams just go, okay, well, they're not running with him, so we know it's passed. So they got to at least try. You'd like to see them, or Nyheim, maybe, again, make a little more space outside, make guys miss. He hasn't done so well going up the middle this year. But again, they have to continue to run the ball with Nyheim Hines because it just makes him more effective as a pass catcher later on.
Let's hit on the receiving core real quick, Jim, before we dive into just your general thoughts on the Colts and just looking ahead to this gauntlet of a schedule coming up. That's really going to decide the Colts season, whether they're truly contenders or pretenders. We're looking into January football here, but how worried are you about T.Y. Hilton this year? I mean, of course, the groin injury happened last week in Detroit. Still questionable for this upcoming Sunday against Baltimore, but no touchdowns over a calendar year, not for T.Y. Just the chemistry, I don't think it's been there with Rivers. I mean, of course, like you mentioned before, no preseason, the shortened training camp is going to do that for you with a new quarterback. But I really believe I'm a little bit worried as far as maybe T.Y.'s taking a step back. I mean, it's not surprising, so to say. He's reaching that age 30 level. He's probably going to take a step or two back athletically. But it's been a hot topic, of course, on Colts Twitter, as you've seen, Jim. Probably got a lot of questions yourself about T.Y. Hilton's future with the Colts. Just what's been your thoughts on T.Y. this year and what his future could look like here?
Yeah, it's tough. It's hard because, again, you watch T.Y. I did, and a couple of weeks ago, I decided I was just going to watch T.Y. Hilton, watch the tape, and see if, like, hey, if I can you tell on the tape that he's lost a step? And I couldn't. I honestly couldn't. I was watching the tape against Cleveland. He had 6 catches, 69 yards on 10 targets. It's probably his best game of the year. He would have had bigger numbers against Cincinnati had there not been a couple of penalties. But, it's hard. It's really hard to tell to see if he's lost a step. If you ask Frank Reich and the coaches, they say absolutely not. He's still the same guy. T.Y. Hilton says it. Philip Rivers says it. But again, that's what they would say, right? So I think it's fascinating to kind of dive into it and see, is it just bad luck? And he has had bad luck with some drops, with some penalties, with all that kind of stuff. But I do think he's going to have a better second half of the season, if only because I still think he's the most talented receiver on the Colts. I mean, I know they have guys. Marcus Johnson's been great, deep ball guy. Zach Pascal's been reliably excellent everywhere he goes and does. He's played in the slot a bunch this year, whereas last year he filled in a lot for T.Y. Hilton on the outside. So you just got to be really happy with what you get out of Zach Pascal. They have obviously great tight ends. And the other thing about this is that he might not have the typical T.Y. season because Frank Reich has seemed to turn this offense, this passing offense at least, into a spread it out. I mean, they have 8 guys with more than 100 yards receiving this year, but nobody with more than 251, which is T.Y. Hilton. It's kind of crazy. There aren't many teams that are like that. I think only the Eagles have 9 guys with over 100 yards. I was just going through. I was looking through the numbers, too. They've had guys that Paris Campbell, T.Y. Hilton, Mo Alie-Cox, Michael Pittman, Nyheim Hines, Zach Pascal, and Marcus Johnson are all different guys who have led the team in targets this year in different games. So he just likes spreading the ball around a lot, and I think that might be what we continue to see the Colts do. But as for Hilton, it's going to be tough because he's not going to be the featured guy the way that I think he was previously in his career. It's going to be hard for him to get the contract that he wants because of that. But I still think he's going to have better games ahead of him coming up for the rest of the year.
We saw the Colts and then make a move at the trade deadline, Jim, because, I mean, Chris Bauer's never done it. We haven't seen the Colts do it since Trent Richardson in the beginning of the 2013 season. We all know how that went. But I think they really think internally, I have to imagine, Jim, that getting Paris Campbell hopefully back in December, Kamoko Turay possibly back Sunday, or even the Tennessee game on Thursday Night Football next week. If those two guys come back and they're at full health and they're how they used to play, let's say Turay's back at his form that we saw last year, Campbell's like we saw in week 1, maybe a little rust had to knock off here and there for a couple weeks. How key are those guys? If they both come back at full strength later in the year, if the Colts make a January push.
Yeah. So to address the part about the trade deadline, Chris Ballard has been pretty clear about he just doesn't. The prices tend to go way up on guys that are not worth it. So that's kind of where he is on the trade deadline. I can tell you that I don't think he spent a lot of time worrying about the trade deadline this year. Obviously, he always has lines in the water. They always do, the Colts, but I just don't think this is the time of year he likes to make major changes to his team. So that's probably what happened there. And again, and then I guess also to your point, they're getting two very key players back. I think Paris Campbell, I think I predicted him to lead the league, or it was kind of my bold prediction story before the season, and I predicted him to lead the Colts in receiving yards. And after watching the way they were going to use him in that first game and second game, I think I was right. I think they had huge plans for him. I think that's part of the reason the passing game maybe started off a little bit slow, is they had to kind of adjust to not having Paris Campbell back or there. If they do get him back, which I know is not necessarily a guarantee just yet, but if they do get him back, it just makes them so much more dynamic. They don't have a receiver like him, somebody with his explosiveness and speed. Again, there's a difference between having just like straight line speed and then just being so quick out of your breaks. And that's what Paris Campbell is. He's so fast out of his breaks, incredible acceleration along with having incredible speed. So if they get him back, they just become that much more dangerous, and the passing game does too. And again, we're talking about a team that is producing a lot of explosive plays already. I mean, just in terms of total explosive plays, they have 27 in the passing game. And most of them are without Paris Campbell. So they can't – just adding him to that will make them that much more dynamic and that much more explosive. And then I actually think that, yeah, Kamoko Ture on the other end, I still don't know what to think about Kamoko Ture. Obviously, I think the talent is immense. We all saw what he did in the first five games last year. I don't know if he's going to be the same Kamoko Ture once he returns. The Colts are working him back slowly. He's already about a week and a half back into his practicing with the Colts again after being on PUP. And so I think he's going to start off slow in terms of not only practice. So I don't know if he plays this week against the Ravens. He might, but I don't know if he plays this week against the Ravens. But they're going to return him slow, and I don't think he's going to get a lot of snaps once he gets back. So I think you're probably right to say December is when you maybe would start to see full-strength Kamoko Ture, and then we'll see what that is. What is full-strength Kamoko Ture now that he's coming off major surgery on that ankle? If he is what he was before the injury last year, it's huge for the Colts because they don't have a pass. Again, it's almost like the same thing, like Paris Campbell. They don't have anybody like him. Nobody with his speed, nobody with his bend around the edge. Again, all credit to, you know, Justin Houston. That's not the way he gets it done. Tyquan Lewis, Danico Autry, Al-Khadi Muhammad. That's not the way those guys get it done on the edge. They do it with a lot more power power. That's the way they get their bull rushes a lot of the time for those guys. Kamoko is a speed guy, and they just don't have a speed guy quite like him being as effective. I know Ben Banigu was supposed to be that guy. He hasn't quite been that guy this year. So Kamoko would be huge in terms of adding versatility to the way they get to the quarterback, and just having more bodies you can throw at the pass rush is always a good thing because you can keep guys fresh when they're on the field.
Last one I have for you, Jim. Appreciate the time as always. Looking at the Colts schedule, not in the next month, but also the next 2 months here, week 17 against Jacksonville, I feel like, I don't want to say it's a guaranteed win, but that team looks like they're trying their best to get into Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields race. Gardner mentioned he's now sitting out games, so we'll see how that goes down there in Jacksonville. But we have the Ravens on Sunday, then quick week, Thursday Night Football at Tennessee, home against the Packers, home against the Titans again on a two-week stretch, then at Houston, at Vegas, home against the Texans, and at the Steelers, who are currently undefeated, the best team in football right now. How do you feel like these next 8 weeks are going to go for this Colts team? This is truly going to be a situation where we're going to find out who exactly they are.
Yeah, that's a dangerous question to ask. Who are they going to be in 2 months? I don't know. I mean, I didn't have them pegged at like what they are now. I think I had them at 5-2, weirdly, through the first 7 weeks. I'd have to look, but I think I did. But I'm not sure. I don't think I had them getting there, you know, this way, the way that they did. So we know a little bit more about this team. We're going to learn a lot more this weekend. I don't think there's any reason why this team shouldn't finish with 10 to 11 wins. You give them one against, like you said, Jacksonville gives them six. I think they're, you know, you give them the rate. Hope, you know, the Raiders should be seven, I would think. I think they're a better team than the Raiders. I think the Raiders are better than some people might expect. But, and then if you say you split with the Titans, that's eight. And then again, yeah, I still think they can take Baltimore. They could maybe split with the Texans and split with the Titans. And then, like I said, that gets you to 9 or 10. And then if you play a little bit better than that, you can maybe get to 11. I don't know about the Pittsburgh game yet. Right now, Pittsburgh looks really hard to beat. But looking at just to kind of doing the math that way, and you get your essentially, I like the way you did it. You kind of give them six and two, given what the Jacksonville game looks like at the end of, or in January. So I can you pull out 4 to 5 more games? I definitely think they can. So I'm expecting them to get to 10 or 11 wins for sure, and be in the playoffs. I don't know where the Titans will be at that point, But 10 or 11 wins to me puts you in the thick of the AFC South playoff push and definitely in a wild card spot.
Really quick one, Jim, before I let you go here. Just the Ravens on Sunday, I've been predicting all week. I think this Colts team matches up very well. I think Chris Ballard's kind of built this team to go into a guy like Lamar Jackson on defense, especially. You have Buckner, you have Leonard, Okereke, a linebacker. Those guys can spy on them. They have the aggressive defensive backs as well. I'm predicting a Colts week. I've been doing so all week on the podcast, Jim. I'm going 24-16. I think it's going to be a slugfest game. But what do you think is going to happen on Sunday? I really think they match up very well with Baltimore.
I actually think they do too. I actually do too. The offense, defensively, I totally agree with you. Offensively, I'm not totally sure yet. Without Marlon Humphrey, though, that's going to be a big loss for the Ravens. Depends what, you know, all those guys are on the close contact COVID list. If they don't have any of those guys, I definitely think the Colts win. But if they get most of them back, it's going to be an interesting challenge for Phillip Rivers because Colts haven't run the ball well this year. I don't expect them to change that against the Ravens. So it's going to be on Phillip Rivers' shoulder to go win that game. And we've seen that can be a good thing. That can be a bad thing. So I think that's where it's going to get interesting. I think he plays smart. I don't think he turns the ball over a bunch this week. And I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to go a little bit lower. I'm going to do Colts win, but 2017.
Yeah, I like that. I think this is going to be a very fun one on Sunday. Jim, of course, you'll have you covered over on the Indy Star. He's our Colts insider. And go listen to their podcast as well with him and Joel A. Erickson at the Colts Cover 2 podcast. And go follow Jim on Twitter at Jim ILO. Jim, appreciate the time, man.
Thanks. Anytime, man. This is a lot of fun.